Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, United says use your headphones or else, and some of the nation's most historical documents are going on tour. Those stories next in the travel news.
Our job here is to make you a smarter traveler next time you hit the road, and at 11:22 we'll tell you about some of the current airport scams and how you can avoid them.
It's mailbag day on the Travel Guys, and we'll answer some of your questions starting at 11:35. Airport security, how to get an honest list of hotels, and more answers coming up.
Southwest Airlines is transitioning from being a unique airline to being just like the other guys. How's it going? Perhaps not so well. We have a Southwest update at 11:55.
Here with information to make you a smarter traveler, we are the Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Live and in living radio, we are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. Thanks for coming along. I'm here in Sacramento in my little home studio, and Mark is afar. He's been
far for a
couple of days in a row. Mark, first of all, tell us where have you been and where you are and what's going on?
Well, I spent most of the week in Charleston, South Carolina, at some meetings for the National Tour Association. Now I am here in Phoenix this Saturday morning for the beginning. A group from Sacramento is on its way here right now. We're going to go see some ball games for the next few days here in the Valley of the Sun. So that should be kind of fun. And God, I've had some interesting hotel experiences in the last few days, too.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, in full disclosure to our audience today, this program has been pre-recorded. Part of it was yesterday, and this part is actually this morning before airtime at 11 a.m. this morning. So we're just kind of hopping all around. So if Mark sounds like he's like on his phone, it's because you see he's on his phone. Hey, tell us about your unique hotel and travel experiences that you were talking about.
Oh, goodness. Well, the travel experiences have been pretty good. Let's save those for a second. Listen, if you're a person who travels and you need a hotel, there are a lot of choices out there. There are a gazillion brands now. Heck, Marriott has almost a dozen themselves that their name is on. Hilton has a wide portfolio of hotels, and you can pick everything from a luxury hotel to something that is kind of a budget hotel. The challenge, Tom, now is that it's hard for, with all of these new brands and everything, it's extremely difficult for people to be able to figure out which brand is related to which hotel and what should their expectations be when they get to some of these hotels. And I've stayed in a couple of the, let's call them low to mid-level properties in the last few days just because I needed some convenience and the like. And my experience has not been that all that great. And I thought I would share them with you because if you use these hotels, you may be very happy with them for reasons of your own. But for reasons of my own, I'm not. So I wanted to just tell you what those reasons are in case our reasons align. I'm talking about specifically about Homewood Suites, which is a Hilton brand. They are, first of all, be very careful with Homewood if you need two beds in the room. Because standardly, it's a one-bed hotel, and the second bed is often a pull-out or a roll-away or something like that. So when Homewood Suites tell you that they have two beds, this wasn't my experience, but I've had this experience with groups. Make sure that you ask them, are these two beds that are permanently in the hotel room, or are you bringing one of them in, or is one of them a sofa bed, which, of course, is a much different sleeping experience than a regular bed. This is the case at many Homewood Suites. Also, Homewood, in because it's a mid-level, maybe slightly below mid-level brand, does everything they can to be labor efficient. That means there's almost no help in the hotel. So if you're calling the hotel, you may have a hard time getting someone to answer the phone. There isn't a lot of front desk help, so you may have to wait in a line, et cetera, et cetera. This was also my experience, Tom, with Aloft Hotels, which is where I stayed last night here in Phoenix. I'd never stayed in an Aloft hotel before. It is a Marriott brand. It's designed for, you know, younger people on the go, I guess. interestingly enough, no phones in the room. First time I'd ever found that. You find some hotel rooms now with no clocks, but this one had no phones. Wow. So if you have to call the front desk, you have to call on your cell phone.
Wow.
Of course, this isn't a problem if the people at the front desk are answering the phone, but at this particular loft hotel, that's not their strong point. It's also a problem if you have to call the hotel to get the on-demand airport shuttle, which was the case here. And when they don't answer the phone, then you've got to figure out another way to get to the hotel late at night, which was my case yesterday. I transited through Denver yesterday. It snowed all day in Denver yesterday, which Denver knows what snow is. So they handled it pretty well, even in March. But all the de-icing and stuff had to go on meant that as the day wore on, flights were an hour, eventually a couple hours late by the end of the day. But to United's credit and to Southwest credit, they have a hub in Denver. Both airlines, the cancellations on the board were very few. Almost every flight was delayed, but there were very few cancellations. So they really worked hard to do that. Anyway, I got in late last night and had a reservation at a loft hotel. Very poor experience, very minimal rooms. If you're really and truly, if you're looking for any type of room amenities, then you might as well forget it. If you are looking to save a little money and the aloft price is what you're looking for, just have reasonable expectations. Again, last night and this morning, only one person at the front desk who was answering the phone, handling checkouts, answering questions, taking care of the hotel shuttle, all of that kind of jazz. So if service or efficiency for yourself is important, then I would be very careful with those two hotel chains. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It makes a lot of sense. You know, I have looked at a loft. I have never stayed there, but I know when they first came out as part of the Marriott brand, they were, I don't know, it's kind of like the new wave of hotel styles, all kind of just hard surfaces. And straight edges, and like you say, and not much else going on. And I had no idea that they had no phones in the room. That would pretty much make me crazy. I'd be running up and down from my room to the front desk way too many times.
Well, and you hit on a number of other things there, too. It's minimalist when it comes to service. So if you don't need much and you're self-contained, and you know where you're at or where you're going and all of those things, why then you're probably okay. But I was very, very disappointed in the quality. Of course, if they'd answered the telephone, that might've given them a few more points. But even this morning, it took me almost 10 minutes to get to the front desk to get a question answered about the airport shuttle, because there were other people ahead of me in line and there was only one person there. This is Homewood Suites, pretty much operates the same way. So anyway, just be careful. If you're a service-oriented person, those are two chains that, and as you mentioned, Tom, there are a lot of them now. Most people aren't familiar with a lot of the brand names and stuff. So ask questions, go online, look under amenities for the hotel. In most cases now, hotels do not answer their own telephones anymore. Sometimes you can get to a live person. Sometimes you cannot.
Yep. Maybe they should change their name from aloft to alone, as that's how you will be left alone.
And for some people, that may be exactly what they're looking for.
Exactly.
Just a quick word here before we get to the travel news. Charleston, great place to visit if you're from the West Coast. Many people are not familiar with Charleston. Savannah is often a city that you would combine with it. Those are two of the most historical cities in the South. They are also two of the most expensive. They're also folks from California who don't do well when they travel to humid places. Be careful, because the South is very humid. Actually got up yesterday morning and it was kind of humid in Charleston, and the high for the day was only 75. So be careful about going there during the summer months, because it's going to be humid. But Charleston and Savannah are full of history and just wonderful, wonderful places to visit. We stayed in a suburban area called Somerville, because the hotel prices in downtown Charleston are just, get ready, because most of them start with a 4 or a 5 or a 6 per night. So if you go to Charleston, you may find that there are lots of hotels on the perimeter. I'm in Savannah, same way. So that would be a way to save yourself some money. Of course, then you're going to need a rental car and you're not going to walk in the historic district for dinner some nights. So it's whatever your wallet will afford. Here in Phoenix for spring training, lots of people. I'm in a baggage claim area, as you might well have figured out by the background sounds. But lots of people here wearing, of course, the jersey of their favorite baseball team, because there are clubs in spring training all around here in Phoenix. That's why I'm here. We'll be following the Giants for the next 5 days. And it's one thing about the Phoenix area for spring training. You say, well, what hotel do you stay in? The games are all over the Valley of the Sun. So one day you're going to be going to a suburban area like Goodyear, and one year you'll go to Surprise, and one day you'll be in Scottsdale, and one day you'll be in Mesa. So we find that for years and years and years, we've used a Marriott hotel north of the airport here, and that kind of puts us in the middle of things and allows us to get to all of the stadiums within 15 or 20 minutes. So if you're coming down here for spring training, think about the fact that if you're a Giants fan or an A's fan, there isn't necessarily a game every day at their stadium. So you may, if you don't need a game every day, that's fine. But if you do, then a location that's in the middle and allows you to commute by automobile would probably be a little bit better.
All right. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. As Mark pointed out, he's in Phoenix. I'm here in town. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, no matter where Mark is, we do our best to bring you up to date on the travel news. And with today's edition of the Travel News, once again, here's Mark.
Travelers and taxes, these seem to go together. Municipalities love taxing travelers for sometimes it's okay because it's for things that will improve our travel experience. But increasingly, we are finding that locations, states, cities, communities are deciding to tax travelers, and those monies are not necessarily going to make your travel experience better or to promote travel to their area. They are going to take care of municipal expenses. Delaware, Rhode Island, Hawaii have all recently raised their taxes. It's not uncommon now to find hotel taxes over 15% in cities, lots and lots and lots of them now. So just beware there when you get ready to pay that hotel bill and you see that wasn't the dinner from last night. Those are the hotel taxes for the last couple of days. Solvang, speaking of folks that are with tax situations and stuff, the little town of Solvang, California, which is a Danish heritage community down just north of Santa Barbara and south of San Luis Obispo, just off of Highway 101. The town of Windmills, they have a serious problem like some other small communities do when it comes to rental properties, short-term rental properties, because we've mentioned this on the program before recently. Increasingly, larger entities are buying up vacation rentals, and it's become a business. No one lives in those rentals. They are rented out 365 days out of the year. And Solvang, California, they are refining the rules to make sure that the rentals don't overwhelm the local housing stock. Kind of an interesting situation where a small town is kind of fighting back. They want you to be able to come and to use those short-term rentals, but they want to make sure that that local community housing is not overwhelmed by the fact that all of those available homes have been turned into rentals. So stay tuned. We'll probably have an update on that before too awful long. United Airlines. Boy, I'll tell you what, Tom, this is the biggest story of the week. Everybody in airports is talking about it. And here I am in an airport right now talking on my cell phone. But this is not the same as being on an airplane and talking on your cell phone or listening to a movie or your grandkids' latest update or the latest news from your business or something like that. If you fly, you know that people, and you're in airports and other public spaces, you know that people are not hesitant at all these days to share their life with you via their phone by listening out loud to entertainment or various forms that are communicating with people. United Airlines has decided enough is enough. Here's the headlines. United threatens to kick off passengers who don't use headphones. And they're really serious about this, Tom, because they have put it into their contract of carriage. Mm-hmm. And what that is it's the contract between you and the airline and says you agree to do certain things. Nobody ever reads this. But in there are all of the things that if something happens, these are your rights, et cetera, et cetera. United has put the headphone etiquette into their contract of carriage. So it's become an official policy, spells out in the contract of carriage what is expected of their passengers. They have updated Section 21 of their contract, which covers reasons the airline can refuse to transport passengers.
Well, we this pretty much puts an end to us being able to do what we're doing right now, and head to a broadcast from the United plane. So I guess we'll just have to put that on the back burner forever.
Well, yes, we won't be able to broadcast live from the plane during the flight because they might put me off the plane. But this is like I said, if you fly, you know that this is a problem. I know you only fly occasionally, Tom, but you comment on it even.
No, it's everywhere, and I'm glad to see somebody doing something about it. I'm surprised that, if people don't have headphones or whatever, I mean, the plane can make a couple of extra bucks by having a little stash there, and they could sell you some buds or something to plug into your device and solve the problem. But, can you imagine being banned for life for a move like that?
Well, and here's the deal. Of course, a lot of the phone that I'm working, talking to you on right now, has no plug-in for earbuds. The earbuds are wireless. And, of course, for some people, wireless earbuds are a little bit of a challenge, keeping them charged and the like. It's not something that you plug into your phone like some of the older phones do. So many people are not carrying those earbuds mm-hmm. with them because no one has ever called them on this before. And we have this problem on our tour buses, and we have taken a complete no tolerance policy. I'm sorry, but unless it's a personal emergency that's going on right now, then you can wait until the next stop, and you can do whatever you wish in the privacy. You know, walk away from the other folks on the coach and stuff. We don't want to hear about all of your personal life or what you're going to do tomorrow in the city that you're going to. We don't care. And it's a bit of a disturbance, and it's gotten completely out of control. And so I'm going to guess that United will not be the first airline to do this. So if you're just tuning in, United Airlines has updated its contract of carriage to now formally require passengers to wear headphones when listening to audio or watching videos. Contract of carriage is really what dictates passenger behavior because that tells you what is expected of you on the plane. And United has said, and I flew two United flights yesterday. I cornered one of the flight attendants on one of my flights yesterday and said, look, are you guys serious about this? She said, we put someone off the plane yesterday.
Wow.
So I would say to you that if you're going to fly United, take your headphones or be prepared to be harassed, maybe left behind, because that's what this is. Can you hear the applause in the background?
I can. I can. I know. Well, we've talked a lot about this over the last few years, and I could hear cheers from you and other listeners that we talked about this at the moment that it was announced.
It's not a big deal. But it's a big deal if you've ever experienced it. The other problem, too, is somebody who's sitting next to you and they have cheap headphones and they've cranked their volume up kind of loud.
Oh,
and basically you're inside their headphones.
Yeah.
So if that happens politely, let the passenger next to you know that this is a little bit of a problem. They might be willing to turn down the sound for you. And if they're not, why then politely hit the call button and tell the flight attendant that this is an issue. Same thing if you're on a plane and somebody's doing, not using a headset at all and is doing what we've been talking about here. You can ask them if you wish, but if you don't wish to get involved with a confrontation with your fellow passenger, just call for a flight attendant and explain briefly the problem to them. I assure you, if you're on a United flight, based on my experience yesterday, that, and you know what I think is going to happen, Tom, if they enforce this and it becomes, people start blogging about it and Facebooking about it and Twittering about it and the like, what's going to happen is that within a very short time, this problem is going to go away. And that would be a good thing for everyone. All right, two more quick stories here. America's founding documents, the things like the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and stuff. It's the country's 250th anniversary. They are going to be touring the country in eight cities through August. The closest the documents will get to Sacramento are Los Angeles and Seattle. We have a list of all of the cities and the dates at travelguysradio.com. So if you're interested in seeing some of America's most famous documents from some of our very early days as a country, or even before we were a country, they will be touring the United States, eight cities through August. Again, Los Angeles and Seattle are the two closest cities to us in Sacramento. A list can be found at travelguysradio.com. And last but not least here, the travel industry is stepping up its lobbying efforts to try to get Congress to do something about this whole situation with the TSA folks and Department of Homeland Security. There's a partial government shutdown going on. Nobody seems to really care, but these TSA people are going to not show up for work someday, probably in increasing numbers, and it's going to cause a problem for travel. And you know what? When that happens, it's not going to matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican if the plane leaves without you, whether you're a donkey or an elephant, if you don't get through security in time or you have to spend an extra half an hour there. Come on, people, we can get on. This is something we can fix. Somehow we can figure this out. It's just wrong for TSA workers to not be paid, to be given a promissory note. We'll pay you when we get some money. It's just wrong. There has to be a way around it. Jeff Freeman, who is the CEO of the U.S. Travel Association, calls it unfair and reckless. He says it's absolutely crazy that, and he also commented on the fact that closing the pre-check lanes, which was talked about last week by the lady who used to run the Department of Homeland Security, closing the pre-check lanes, U.S. Travel says, is crazy. Those are the people who have been vetted and go through security the fastest. He said those are the those are the lanes that you should be expanding and trying to get more people to go through so that you can get people through security easier. In fact, in some places now there is touchless TSA lanes. You don't even have to talk to a person. You can present your ID. The camera can take a picture of you, say, yes, this is you, and we have you on a flight, and off you go. And that is your travel news for today. This is this is kind of a new section segment. We would need an hour to explain all of this, but it can be done really fairly simply. Chris Elliott is a guest on our program on a regular basis, and he has penned an article about this and has other information. You can find it on his website at Elliott.org. That's two L's and two T's in Elliott.org. You can find more information. But basically what Chris is talking about this week is that we are starting to see AI is starting to impact our lives in some of the ways that people talked about for years that this was coming. And what has happened now is that we're seeing fake websites. We're seeing that scammers are getting a lot more creative. They're sending people texts now and saying, you know, you need to reconfirm your hotel reservation. And so when you call them, of course, confirming your hotel reservation always would include giving them some sort of credit card number so that they can scam you. So you've got to be extremely careful. If a travel entity, a hotel, an airline, something like that, calls you and says, look, there's a problem. We need to verify you. And the way we're going to do it is through your credit card. Don't do it. Just don't do it. Tell whomever it is that you'll be happy to call them back, and don't call them back on the number that's on your phone that they've just called you on, because that may be a scam number. Look up the actual number for the entity that has hypothetically called you and give them a call back directly and say, and before you do that, ask the person on the phone for some sort of identifying feature. Who are they? You know, how can you be identified when I call back to the hotel, the attraction, the airline, in order to confirm who it is that I'm speaking to and that that person is legit? So you've got to be smarter and smarter and smarter. I was standing at the hotel last night when I was checking in. The desk clerk was dealing with somebody who had gotten a text from the parking people at the hotel, hypothetically, saying that they owed more money. And the gentleman at the desk was explaining that, no, what you've got is a complete and total scam. Our parking people would never do anything like that. But they knew that the guest had stayed at the hotel. And so they had some information that allowed the guests to be a little bit concerned that this might be legit. So just be careful. If someone contacts you and asks you for credit card information, you need to verify it before you give out that information.
We're going places with that sports leisure flair. A world of adventure, and we take you there.
Twice a year at Sports Leisure Vacations, we invite our travelers to come out and find out what's cooking, what's new at Sports Leisure Vacations. Our spring preview day is on April the 4th, the Saturday before Easter. It'll be at the KVIE studios. There are two programs at 9:30 and 11:30. There is no admission charge, but you must have a reservation because seating is limited. If you'd like to come out to our spring preview day, which will tell you some of the trips that we'll be offering later in 2026, including our Thanksgiving and Christmas schedule, and a look at the first part of 2027, you can come to Sports Leisure Spring Preview Day. Give us a call at 916-361-2051, or you can go to sportsleisure.com for information on reservations. Sports Leisure Vacations Spring Preview Day. Sign up today.
All right, my friends. We have a at travelguysradio.com. There's a place where you can send your questions to Mark and I. And that's where the majority of these questions came from. So as we promised, we'll answer some of them on the air. So let's get started with a question from Stan. And here again, a lot of these questions, folks, are going to sound familiar, stuff that's banging around in our heads a lot of the time as well. Stan says, it makes me very nervous going through security with cash in my pocket. I have to put it in the tray or a bowl. Always feel a little lucky when I recover it on the other side. I don't usually have a carry-on with me, but perhaps I should bring one so I could put my wallet and cash in it. You know, I run into that too, Mark. I do carry a little backpack with me, and I can always drop that and my cell phone in it and let it slide right through the X-ray machine. What's your thoughts?
Well, some people would, Tom, might think that this is a reflection on the TSA workers and perhaps the fact that they're not all completely honest. I will suggest to you that's not the issue here. The issue is not with the TSA workers. The issue is with your fellow passengers who are passing through security with you, and they're passing through. And, you know, I have a hip replacement, so I have to go through the special machine and get a little extra scanning. So sometimes my stuff will sit there on after it's gone through the scanning for a minute or even two. And sometimes I can keep track of it with my eyes, and sometimes I can't. So, yes, I understand Stan's concern about putting cash or your wallet or even your cell phone and leaving it in complete public disclosure there for a matter of time. Here's what I suggest to you, Stan. Obviously, you've thought about the carry-on possibility, and that's what most people do is they take and put that stuff in their carry-on before they even approach an experienced traveler, before they even approach TSA screening. So there's nothing in their pockets except maybe their boarding pass or their driver's license or something like that, so they can quickly transition once they've cleared the initial screening at TSA to get your bag screened. So if you don't have a carry-on, then you don't have a place to put your pocketed stuff, especially your cash and your wallet. Ladies, you probably have a purse, but some ladies probably have the same concern, wanting a larger carry-on to be able to put that purse in, or at least a place to put their wallet. Here's my suggestion. Bring a jacket that has a zippered pocket that closes. Perhaps it's on the inside of the jacket. Maybe it's just the pocket on the outside. If you put your valuables in there and you zip it up, then they're not going to be visible to the public. And people who are in that kind of a situation, if they're looking to make a quick getaway with your stuff, with your valuables, it's going to have to be exactly that, a quick getaway, because there's a lot of people watching there. So if you just put your stuff in a pocket where it can't be seen and nobody knows that it, hey, there's a wallet, there's a wad of money, then I think you're a lot better off if you do that. So my suggestion is a jacket or some kind of something that you can take off that would allow you to put that stuff in it and it where it wouldn't be visible to the public.
There you go. And if you're traveling with a partner that has a purse, spouse perhaps, you can always ask them to drop it in theirs and zip it up. Okay, Michelle, another
one I do.
Yeah, there you go. Another Michelle question. This one, a security question, comes from Michelle. I'm flying on March 14th. That's 2 weeks from today. Are the TSA lines going to be long? How long? How much extra time should I allow?
So far, so good. I am speaking to you from the Charleston, South Carolina airport, and security here was very easy today. The lines are open. I made a point to thank several of the TSA officers that I walked past and said, hey, thanks, guys, for working. And they all smiled and said, you're very welcome. And so I would continue to suggest that sort of approach. These people are basically working under the agreement that they will get paid later. I'm not sure that works for their landlord or their grocery store or how else they survive, but a little kindness might go a long way. So will the TSA lines be long? The lines in Sacramento vary by time of day. TSA opens at 4:00 in the morning, and because United Airlines in Terminal A has some early flights and Southwest has early flights in Terminal B, there often is a little bit of a line at the very opening of security, people who have already cleared their boarding passes and the like and are ready to get onto the concourse. There's also a period of time between 7 and it's called 6 and 7 o'clock when security is pretty heavy for the bank of flights that's leaving around 8 o'clock. It's pretty unpredictable. We also don't know at what point enough TSA officers will have to bail from their job looking for other jobs that pay them on a more regular basis. So we don't know how soon that will become a factor. We've been checking in with the Sacramento TSA guys on a pretty regular basis so that if it becomes an issue there, we'll be able to tell you about it. But you've got to allow a little extra line. And the other thing is you're going to be coming home from some other airport, and you may not have any idea what's going to happen there. So until this whole partial government shutdown gets over with, you've got to give yourself an extra 20 to 30 minutes through the security line because you don't know what you might run into.
If you're just joining us, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. We're doing the Travel Bag Mailbag, and our next question comes from Matthew. Is there any one best guide online for picking a hotel? He says he's looking for something with a neutral rating, not a site like Booking or TripAdvisor or others like that.
Well, here's a man who's thinking a little bit ahead. When you log on to the TripAdvisor or the booking site or one of the other people that are selling you travel, oftentimes the hotels that are at the top of their list are the hotels that are paying them the largest commission. That makes fairly logical sense, I guess. But I would suggest that you're not going to find anything neutral there, which is, I think, what Matthew has picked up on. Google Hotels is an excellent spot. Kayak.com, K-A-Y-A-K, lists hotels neutrally. Trivago is another place, although Trivago, I might suggest, is also a little bit prone to that, where they're getting the best commission. Google Hotels is a place that I would look at. In the old days, we went to the AAA travel book, because they were all listed in alphabetical order.
There you go.
So there was no preference to one or the other. But nowadays, in many cases, on many websites, that's not just hotels. It could be attractions. It could be airlines, airfares, whatever that you're looking for. They're given a preferential placement on the website because they paid for it. Sometimes it'll say something like sponsored that you can pick up on. And sometimes, like if you go to the booking.com website and you just look for hotels in San Francisco, it's going to list them certainly in the order that they would prefer to sell them to you as to just someplace that is neutral. So that's something to think about. Google Hotels, Matthew, would be my first choice.
There you go. You know, those AAA books, they still make them. If you go into a AAA office, they'll have them for all different parts of the country. I wonder if they have that online yet, I wonder. Okay,
they're still worth their weight in gold.
and they still weigh a lot. All right, this is a fun question. Margaret wants to know if her friend is right. And her friend says, Margaret, you don't need one of those real IDs. She says, my passport will get me past airport security. Is that true?
Yeah, a lot of airport security is kind of the theme here today. Margaret, your friend is right. That is true. If you have a current valid passport, as long as it hasn't passed its expiration date, that will get you through airport security. And the answer is no, you do not need a real ID. But if you don't have a real ID or your passport or one of the other short list of approves, there's a military ID, there are a couple of other things that are acceptable. But if you don't have one of those things, now they're charging you $45 to get through security for the extra screening and the like. So if you have the passport, Margaret, yes, your friend is right. That passport will get you right through airport security.
We're doing the Travel Guys mailbag, and from it comes this from Toby. The new Southwest boarding process, he says, is a disaster. There's no overhead space if you are... If you're one of the people in the last 40 to 50 people getting on the plane, you're in trouble. He says, I thought this would be better, but it's not. Do you think there's any way to go back to the old system?
Short answer. Sorry, Toby. You and a lot of other. This is bothering mostly the people who flew Southwest loyally for a long time.
Sure.
Because they were used to a certain system and it worked. And it worked for the customers, but it didn't work for the shareholders. So now we've created a system that works for the shareholders, and unfortunately, it's not working as well for the customers. Southwest is having some issues. We actually, in the last segment here on the program, are going to address that a little bit and what their upper people management are saying they're going to try to do. But Toby, you're not the only person who says that you think it's a disaster. It's getting a lot of attention all around the internet. A lot of Southwest customers are not happy. Do I think they will go back to the old system? No, there's not a chance of that happening. But they may tweak this a little bit, and we'll have a little bit more of an update for you in the next segment of the program.
I have a quick question here in between. Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay. Southwest boarding, when it used to be A section, B section, C's, you know, people would line up and go, and you probably should be easily answer this one, Mark, because it's typical with a lot of the other airlines that always sold seats specifically. How will people line up to board the plane when they now have an assigned seat?
Well, just like the other carriers have boarding groups. So with Southwest, you boarded by the letter and number on your boarding pass. Now you're going to find a more standard system where you're boarding group one, group two, group three, group four. And of course, you've got the same situation that you have with other airlines. You're going to have anybody who is handicapped or needs extra assistance. But the difference is those people can't get on the plane and take the seats at the very front. They have to take the seat that they're assigned to. So there's less of an incentive to try to scam the system and get on the plane early than there used to be. So that's the same as it is with other carriers. And you're not going to with the boarding. And then you're going to have the people, of course, who have some kind of status with Southwest. I think there's two or three. And then there's the people who maybe bought up to an extra legroom seat or a preferred seat. They're going to be right behind those folks. So you're going to have, I think Southwest has 8 boarding groups, or at least that's what they've had so far. So it's going to be very much the way other airlines board their aircraft.
All right, let's change gears from planes to automobiles. Chanel asks, is buying the full tank, at the beginning, when you rent your car, they'll offer you to buy a full tank at a good deal when you rent the car. And Chanel says, seems like the price is pretty good if you buy in advance. Is this a good way to go?
Chanel, unfortunately, generally not. If you know, the exception would be is if you are absolutely certain that you're going to use at least 3/4 of the tank, because generally the rate they're offering you is 20-25% what you would pay retail for gasoline. So if gas were $4 a gallon, they might offer you the entire tank at 3.25. And if so, you might say, wow, that's a really good deal. But it depends on how much gas you leave in the tank. And what the car rental company is counting on is that you'll leave a greater value in the tank than what you've used, and they will make more money off of it. So if you know for sure that, hey, listen, I'm driving 1,000 miles, I'm going to fill this tank twice, or I'm going to be tooling around town and I'm going to bring it back pretty much empty, then yes, that is that illusion becomes a good deal. But if the answer to the question is you don't know how much you're going to drive and you're not sure you're going to use at least 3/4 of that gas, then no, resist the car rental's extra effort to make a few bucks off of you and just take the time to fill the tank before you take the car back.
Okay, it's the Travel Guys mailbag. We have one more question before we wrap it up. Alan says, I paid $22 to park at a Hampton Inn outside San Diego overnight last week. That's the first time that he'd ever had to pay for parking at a Hampton, and it wasn't at an airport. Just letting you know that the nickel and diming of travelers is continuing.
Yeah, more and more suburban hotels. This is happening around the Sacramento area. Suburban hotels are charging people a parking fee, and oftentimes it's to park in an unsecured parking lot that previously was free. You're kind of observant, Alan. It is a cash grab, and especially you're seeing this. Like I said, I see it in Sacramento. There are a number of hotels now that Hilton Garden Inn, Hampton-ish, mid-range properties that you would have thought, well, they're not in a downtown area or anything like that. They're suburban. They wouldn't be charging for parking. I don't know what to tell you. The best thing to do, I guess, is to call the hotel you choose and ask them if there's a parking charge. Many of them will disclose it on their website because they don't want you to get there and find out that they're charging you for something that they didn't tell you about. But nonetheless, yes, it is. That type of charge is spreading. It's getting they're going up. There's a DoubleTree hotel in San Jose that I stay at occasionally that gets $20 a night for parking, which is just beyond ridiculous. The lot isn't secured in any way, and there's no sign that they've hired any kind of a security person. It's just a cash grab from the hotel. So sorry, Alan, I don't have a workaround or any other way to get around that for you.
All right. If you have any questions for the Travel Guys, remember, go to TravelGuysRadio.com. Right there on the homepage, you can drop your question. If we can't get the answer to you on the air, Mark will send you an email with an answer.
Well, Southwest Airlines has been having, a bit of a public relations problem since the last week of January when they went to their reserve seating and kind of officially completed becoming just like all the other people and not being like Southwest used to be, which is causing some consternation among their very loyal following. Maybe not as much among the people who are finding themselves on a Southwest plane for the first time, since they might have been one of those people who said, hey, you know what, if I don't get a reserve seat, I'm not fighting everybody else to get on board. So Southwest is going to make more money, I think. But some people are thinking that perhaps they have given up something pretty important to their culture. According to the Dallas Morning News this week, and actually I got a copy of this letter also, their executive vice president and chief customer and brand officer. That's a mouthful. Mm-hmm. Tony Roach published a letter to the customers saying they were refining the boarding group process to improve overhead bin availability near your seat while maintaining the fast boarding and deplaning process you expect from Southwest. It sounds like a bunch of BS to me. The problem they're having is that people are getting on board the plane with these seats that they've paid more money for, and there's no overhead space left for them. And then, of course, the great unwashed who are getting on last, they're completely screwed. And Southwest, United Airlines put in these, I don't know if the other carriers have done it or not, but United has overhead bins that are bigger, and the big bags can sit on their side. So instead of getting three bags in a bin, you can get five. So that's just a lot of extra boarding space that you can come up with. And Southwest doesn't have those enlarged bins. And now that they're charging people for baggage, which started last summer, more people are trying to schlep one onto the plane and save the $35-$40 one way. You can't blame them for that. But the airline says that by the end of 2026, they will have 70% of the fleet upgraded. Remember, none of it is upgraded right now. So they will have to do this one at a time. They are also going to put some signs up reserving overhead bins for people who have paid for the upgraded seats with more legroom or better position on the aircraft, so that hypothetically other customers won't put their bags in there. Mm-hmm. I can see the Southwest flight attendants becoming police officers here soon for this. So I don't know if there's any winners out of this at all. Here's a Southwest customer on a feed that I got this morning. We've been Southwest Air customers for 15 years. Cardholders, A-list preferred. This new Southwest is hugely disappointing. A-list preferred is one of their frequent traveler designations. This new Southwest is hugely disappointing. The new boarding is utter chaos. Paying for extra legroom and being on planes with no extra legroom. Employees aren't friendly anymore. This is awful, all in capital words. So, wow. So you can see why the vice president of branding and all of that very other long name that he had was all alarmed about it. I'm guessing the CEO was all alarmed about it, too, but he's not putting his name out in public. All we can do is see how it goes. Southwest has not come out with any official statements, but more than one person online, and some of them people who write airline blogs and the like, are saying that it's taking Southwest 7 to 10 minutes longer to board departing aircraft under the new system. So we'll see. For those of you who aren't familiar, usually an aircraft's time on the ground is somewhere between 45 minutes and an hour and 15 minutes, depending on the size of the aircraft and the like, how many people have to get on and get off. Southwest regularly tries to get their turn their planes in 35 or 40 minutes. So over the course of a day, you might pick up an extra segment there, which would be mean a lot extra revenue and profit for the airline. So you just have to see if what happens if Southwest can't turn those planes as quickly and has to lengthen out the schedules, then that means it's going to cost them money. Oh, darn. I hate to see an airline do something that screws the customers and ends up getting them in the end.
There you go. Well, you've been flying United for a lot of years, and they don't seem to be having any of these kind of issues. So maybe Southwest can figure it out on their own sooner or later.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, I'm flying sooner than later, so I'm not looking forward to it. Okay, that's a wrap for another Travel Guys radio program. We'll be back next Saturday at 11 a.m. Remember, you can find us at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark, final word.
And remember, dance like nobody's watching. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.